Hey there, nursing community. Welcome back for season two of Two Male Nurses.
Two Male Nurses, strap in for season two, bringing double the knowledge we used to, plus all of the drama you've come to love from season one.
Yeah, that's where we're bringing Netflix. This. Yeah, that's it, man, that's it. Welcome back. We're super excited to be here bringing you season two. We're really going to try to be diving into this stuff. And today we're talking about a very, very interesting concept, RSI.
Stay tuned.
So today we're going to be talking RSI, what it is, medications involved, and why we even got ourselves into this situation to begin with. And Ben is going to start us by talking about criteria for intubation.
Intubation. So RSI, rapid sequence intubation, rapid sequence induction. You're basically just going to rapidly intubate somebody. The rapid is the most important part they really like to focus on. It's for people who are high risk for aspirating, or they're not protecting their airway. They need their airway. They need it now. It's that rapid sequence intubation. Right. And you hear it. You're walking around the unit, all of a sudden it's like, hey, this guy's crashing. Grab the RSI kit. Right. You know, I remember the first time. It was down the ER. People running around. People yelling letters out. You know, I had no idea what was going on. Like, you guys do that, I'll grab a Coke. You know, I'm going to grab a Coke. I'll meet you. You know, I had no idea what was going on. Yeah.
Just wait for them to ask you for the bougie. You're like, I have no idea what you're talking about now.
Well, yes, I am. Thank you very much. Yeah, you know, and there's a couple of certain steps. I've been part of some really, really smooth ones. I mean,
I've definitely been a part of a few that were not as smooth, not so much
exactly. Yeah. And a lot of it just has to do with everybody understanding the little things you need in the steps. So that's what we're kind of going over today. So criteria for someone being intubated, we'll just start there. There's three main indications to intubate a patient. We're pulling this out of a book. It was recommended to us by a friend of ours. The book is called Duke's Secrets. So Duke has some good secrets.
Yep, very good secrets. We're going to bestow those upon you guys.
So three main indications intubate. Number one, inability to protect the airway. Basically, altered mental status.
Classic.
Second one.
What kind of patient will you see that won't be able to protect their airway?
Sure. I mean, it could be a druggie who OD'd, can't protect his airway. Pretty healthy guy, but he's just asleep. Right. But then it could also be a cardiac arrest. Right. And so it's not, you're not intubating him because he's a cardiac arrest. You're intubating him because he arrested cardiac-wise. Now he can't protect his airway. Exactly. Right. So number one, inability to protect the airway, whatever it is, whether they're altered, whether they're asleep, whether they're just not paying attention, it's inability to protect the airway.
Right. Especially when you're not able to correct that altered mental status rapidly, in a low blood sugar or whatever.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. Well, that's a great one.
Yeah. So then the next one is going to be some sort of hypercapnic respiratory failure. So in this one, we're talking about a COPD exacerbation where their CO2 is so high and they're in such a bad state that they're not going to be able to correct their acid-base balance on their own. They're going to need ventilation support through a ventilator and being intubated.
And you've seen them. They say, we're gonna pap them first. Right. We're gonna pap them for a while, and then that doesn't work. So we intubate.
Right.
I actually meant to say this first, but we're gonna toss this out there. Just keep in the back of your mind, intubating should be like, I don't want to say last, but you don't want to just give them a tube. Right. Like a lot of these people are so sick already and have so many respiratory problems, then you don't get the tube out. So sure, now the patient's asleep, now they're intubated, and now you have a really easy day because they're intubated, they're sedated, and you're chilling.
Yep.
But I mean, it is way better to just pap them for a while. Mm-hmm. You know, you put up with them yelling at you and ripping the mask off and I'm hungry. What do you guys, you guys are starving me. It's like, ma'am, your glucose is 300, you good, you know, but like, big picture, we don't want to intubate anybody.
Right. And where we actually saw this implemented a lot, I mean, early on in COVID, everyone got intubated immediately almost. That's what it felt like. Then as we were going on, we saw, once that tube goes in, there's no coming off of
it. It's not coming out.
Such a low percentage. So working really hard, being like, hey, we're going to do BiPAP. You're going to self-prone yourself if they're able to.
Aggressive pulmonary toilet. aggressive. And you're like, what the heck is that? Just sit him
head
up in the bed.
45 degrees, yeah. Incentive spirometer.
Discharge. Yeah, discharge. But for real, just being aggressive and like very, yes, walk in there and make him do the IS. Sit him up in the bed. Just do everything you can not to intubate. They're not supposed to be intubated. No one's supposed to be intubated. Right. So,
absolutely. And this obviously isn't going to work for the person who's, you know, unable to protect their airway, like post arrest or whatever. But for example,
inability to protect the airway, hypercapnic respiratory failure. And then the third one here, hypoxemic respiratory failure, basically ARDS.
Right.
So it's not related to the COPD that they're having or the, you know, the asthma exacerbation or whatever that. You have just a respiratory failure. They're hypoxemic. You got to tube them.
Right.
So ARDS, basically ARDS. Yeah. And so the book just kind of points out that there's some hemodynamic indications where you'd intubate, and like I said, they kind of tied that back into the altered mental status. So yeah, the heart attack is a hemodynamic instability. Now you're intubating them, but you really intubated them because they weren't maintaining their airway. You didn't do it right. So
yeah,
those are your three main reasons to intubate.
Right, and yeah, and I guess even going, you know, this is in the ICU kind of setting. You know, people get intubated for procedure purposes too, but on ability to protect their airway, you know, potentially in those situations. So that really does capture those three different areas. So we're talking unable to protect the airway, hypercapnic respiratory failure, or hypoxemic respiratory failure. So when we start seeing this, that's when we need to start thinking as a nurse and kind of anticipating that, hey, this patient looks terrible.
Right.
We're seeing these signs and we need to start thinking, okay, what are we going to need? What do we need to anticipate to be able to, you know, have on hand?
Nice.
And that's where we start thinking about our RSI kit or our rapid sequence induction medications and be ready to very quickly, you know, put them under and get an airway.
Exactly. Because we're not the practitioners doing it, but if we can start recognizing these signs, you know, the impending doom, we start recognizing these symptoms, these patterns, being on top of it, having everything readily available and knowing the big picture, what's going on, just better patient outcomes.
Absolutely. Makes that whole process way smoother.
Exactly. So you're now, you know, you're going to be the nurse that's there getting the kit. You're going to already anticipate, hey, this may be a difficult airway. Let me grab the gladioscope. Oh. You're not going to be the nurse getting a Coke. AKA me. So
No, and this anticipation thing, you know, that is a huge part of it. Because, you know, the physicians or the practitioners or whatever, they're only rounding once or twice a day, maybe. And if they start developing these symptoms way later on, then you need to recognize them and be able to say like, hey, this is the path we're going down. We need to fix it.
Totally. Yeah. And so, yes, totally. So part of that planning, part of that anticipation is knowing what kind of stuff you need at the bedside. What do I need to grab? You know, again, you don't want to be the guy. Well, oh, you want the RSI? What else do you need?
Right.
Do you guys
I'm heading down for a coffee. Want me to grab the bougie? Oh, wait, it's already here.
Yeah, exactly. You know, what do we need for this? So there's a couple of things. Again, we're just gonna read off the list here. You want an appropriate fitting mask. You want the bag.
Right.
I would always grab the gladioscope. There's really no reason not to.
Right.
Quick side note, just maybe, again, recognizing difficult intubations. There's a whole different criteria on that. We can talk about that. But the main ones that we're just going to touch on right now are obese population. People who are heavier, you're going to have a difficult time.
Right.
The practitioner will probably have a difficult time getting the tube down. So just grabbing the gladioscope for them. And then kids, you'll see this on the PALS. If you're trying to take your PALS certification, there's other certifications. They talk about this on the CEN a little bit. But kids, they have a big head, little body syndrome. And so basically, it is what it sounds like. Their body's really big, head's big, body's small. And so you want to put a pillow or a towel underneath their neck, and it pushes their body up and lines up their airway. So again, okay, so you got a kid who's crashing, you grab all this stuff, and then you grab a towel. Right. That's just next level stuff, so you don't have to wait, you know, 5 minutes for somebody to grab the towel, and now the kid's crashing.
Right.
So just planning that.
Positioning,
exactly, positioning. So those are the two ones back of your mind. Heavy people, kids.
Cool. And then also, I mean, on our unit, we do have a, difficult airway cart that we get for every unexpected airway, you know, that we're needing to get. And there you will also have your direct laryngoscopes, depending on what kind of blade is wanted. You'll also, and then also be anticipating needing a, the glidescope to be able to visualize it with, like, you know, through video. So having those, those tools handy and ready, you know, that'll make a big difference too. So that's, you know, another thing, a lubricant to be able to slide through there nicely. And what else do we need?
I mean, that's all good stuff. Having that bag mask device, the you know, your AMBU bag. Again, touching on that, just always having the AMBU bag with you. I can't explain. I wish it didn't take me so long to pick up on this, but experienced nurses always have a bag with them.
Right.
And I actually saw a very specific situation where the nurse was just, you know, calling the shots, and she was, okay, let's bag him up. All right, off. All right, this, reposition. All right, bag him back up. It was a nurse who was calling. I'm going to call her out. It was Ashley Kidney. I have to call her. It was call Ashley Kidney. Yeah, she knows. She calls the shots. Right. She's been doing it for a while. And it's, you know, something they say in the books, but she just comes in and just kind of glazes over, like, always have an AMBU bag. But working down the ER, when we stocked the rooms, we had to put an AMBU bag in there.
Right.
When I started, I didn't even know what it was. I literally didn't even know what was in this plastic bag. Like, I'm serious, man. I'm like, well, I just hang it in there. Yeah. Anywhere you're going, you have an AMBU bag. Anywhere you're going. I mean, we had a couple of advanced practitioners tell us this. Me and Andrew, one kind of alluded to it, and one straight up said it. He said, I'm not afraid of a patient I can't intubate. I'm afraid of a patient I can't ventilate. Mm-hmm. And basically saying, like, you know, he just depends on that bag. If something goes wrong, he bags him up. TNCC, right. You know, before you intubate, you bag him up.
Right.
Oh, you reposition, you bag him up. Yep. You bag him up. Everybody bags him up. Ashley Kidney yelling at everybody.
Bags him up.
She bags him up. So yeah. Just keeping that, you know, hey, I got my bag. I'm going to CT, or anything's happening. Oh, they disconnected themselves and the patient's crashing. Where's my bag?
Yep.
So
yeah, absolutely. Cool. And then a last like few other ones, obviously having like suction available, different size ET tubes. And then also an oxygen source is really important as well.
Yeah.
To be able to pre-oxygenate and have that ready. But that suction also, that's the worst thing, is when, you know, someone looks, you know, they're looking down the throat and they see, and they're trying to see the cords, and they're just like, I need suction. And suction's not available.
The worst. It's the worst.
Because the patient's not being oxygenated anymore. They're already paralyzed and sedated. And they're just waiting.
I guarantee the practitioner will roll their eyes and say, well, bag them up.
Yep.
Can we get suction? Does anyone have suction? Can we find some competent nurses while you're at it? You know?
Yeah, like, absolutely. We've heard that one a time or two.
So, yeah, okay. Good. Suction. Yeah, you got cool. Suction, you reposition, you got your bag, you're good to go.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. So moving on, what we're actually been kind of alluding to this whole time is going to be the RSI drugs, which are super exciting drugs. I found that whenever I'm in a situation where I get to push a medication or change someone on drip and I see an immediate change, that's always just pretty cool.
It's very interesting.
Very, very interesting.
Very, very cool.
So, all right, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say this is the RSI kit. It's for newer nurses listening to this, nursing students. It's a kit. Usually it's a plastic bag. I've seen Velcro bags. I've seen fanny packs. I've seen fanny packs like hanging on the wall.
Yeah.
But there was a crash cart. Where do you guys keep your RSI kit? Right. RSI kit, it's going to have several medications in it. If it's an RSI kit specifically, we'll always include sedation and a paralytic.
Right.
Sedation, paralytic.
And it will vary, you know, between which hospitals and stuff, but this is approximately what we'll have. And then we also threw in a few extras just that are often used in you know, rapid sequence induction that are not always stocked in these.
Cool.
But
just one more thing. We actually discussed it previously, but we're just not going to talk doses super specifically because we saw some different stuff. I'm sure it depends on the practitioner, depends right. on the policy or the unit you're working on and the department and the hospital system. So just know your own hospital system parameters.
Right.
It should be posted somewhere. It should be on a health stream. It should be somewhere. You should know, what are my parameters for this? We're not going to touch on them just because of the inconsistency of that, but.
But also it's important, you know.
It is important to know. You have to know.
So we can't say, because I remember one time I had an ER doc tell me to push a whole stick of Neo for a blood pressure that wasn't that low. And I was like, are you sure you want the whole thing? She's like, oh, well, what's the concentration? Oh, no, just one CC would suffice. And I was
exactly.
Oh, I'm glad we had this conversation.
So that's not her bad. I'm sure
right.
whatever hospital she learned at, they probably just had 10 to 1 or something.
Exactly,
So,
absolutely. So, all right. So moving on to our first medication is going to be ketamine. Ketamine is a super cool medication. It was one that kind of was developed back in what, like the 70s or earlier on, and kind of fell out of favor, but it's back and people love it. And by people, I mean, you know, providers that are, you know, prescribing this stuff. And so ketamine is a dissociative, or anesthetic, which is really cool.
I'm laughing about people loving it. The guy on the street corner, he loves it.
It's a hot drug right now. In the hospital. Okay, so what's cool about ketamine is that for one, just classification wise, it is a NMDA antagonist, and it's very much so hemodynamically safe drug.
Cool.
Whenever I've had my patients that are crashing the worst, that have been very, very hemodynamically unstable, but were needing an airway due to a lack of being able to protect themselves now, we were almost willing to wait an extra, like the extra 2 or 3 minutes that it took to get ketamine, so that when we gave that, we weren't like, you know, giving a bunch of propofol and their blood pressure dropping even more when we're already like maxed out on 3 pressors at this point. And cool. So ketamine, yeah, is a hemodynamically stable drug that actually will cause a increase in cardiac output and an increase in MAP.
Wow, that's cool. Yeah. So ketamine specifically is going to increase cardiac output.
Right.
I mean, you think about someone who ODs on fentanyl, they're half dead, they're whatever. You know, they're not moving. Propofol, same thing. You give the prop, blood pressure drops. Ketamine actually will increase.
Yeah, and it's not even just like, you know, oh, it doesn't change. You know, it will actually see like a transient increase, which is really neat. And that's why they'll say that you see an increase in ICP to be cautious when using it with, brain bleed.
That's what I was going to ask. Any like side effects ketamine that you could mention, you think?
Basically just, the brain bleeds, making sure, just in the back of your mind, I mean, you know, just if they're having an increased ICP, that is associated with it.
Cool. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. The next one we're talking about, Versed. It's a GABA receptor agonist. I really don't have a whole lot to say about it. You're gonna give it. It's gonna make them sleepy.
Mm-hmm.
Benzo. It's gonna be in every bag I've seen except for one had Versed.
Right.
It's cool.
Yes, and like in Versed too, I've never seen him solely use Versed and then like a paralytic. It's kind of like an adjunct of like, hey, this patient's like freaking out, are pretty nervous and stuff. At least the dosing that we're giving isn't like knocking them out. It's just like, taking the edge off, making it easier to bag them and getting them ready for intubation.
They'll pair it a lot with like opiates. I'll see, okay, we're giving 100 of Fent and 5 of Versed or whatever.
Yeah.
So they'll definitely pair it with opiates.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the next one on our list is going to be propofol, Diprovan, which is one that, as ICU nurses, we're, very familiar with. We love our prop. It's a great medication. Again, it's in that GABA agonist category. As of working on your central nervous system, that puts you out and asleep very rapidly. And also has a short, half-life. So, once you induce them with all this, be prepared to have maybe another sedative in the back of your mind so once all this intubation stuff's done, because they're going to start waking back up. So propofol. This one, we weren't going to talk about dosages or anything, but we just wanted to mention that a very common one is going to be 10 milligrams per cc. And so there can be, and I've seen it several times where there's confusion. A new grad, they're like, hey, go ahead and give just, it was like for a TEE, for some conscious state, like give 10 of, of prop. All of a sudden they give a whole syringe of prop,
10 cc's.
And then they're doing the TE and this patient's like, wow, they are very asleep. All right, go ahead and give it. Wait a minute. Oh, your syringe is already empty. Exactly. I meant to, 10 milligrams. So just, having that closed loop communication, being like, okay, you want 6, not 6 mls. You want 60 milligrams of it. If that's what they're saying, And so just making sure that you are aware of your dosing, especially with prop.
Yeah. And I would close loop really hardcore with all these medications.
Yeah, absolutely.
This whole RSI situation, everything that's happening, they're even when everybody's smooth and they go really smoothly, people are a little on edge because it's this patient's crashing, everybody's moving quick, thinking quick. This is a time when mistakes get made,
right?
Just close loop it, and no one's gonna yell, you're gonna close loop and no one's gonna yell at you. No one's, how dare you ask me that? It's not gonna happen. Just saying it back. Oh, I want 2 of prop. Okay, so you want 2 cc's of propofol. I'm giving 20 of propofol, correct? Yes, correct. Perfect. You can
cool.
Give it, so.
Yeah, and I've seen it too, where there's like, you haven't done and given the medication where it's ketamine yet, and you're just like, hey, can you just look at this one, make sure I'm giving it right.
Totally. Double check with a buddy.
I love doing that. Yeah. All right. So, and then also prop, obviously, we've talked about it causing that, that decrease in blood pressure. And so that one, on your stable patient, we're cool with it. Or really small doses and stuff, when they're still like struggling to like, you know, secure the airway after we've already gotten in and stuff, like, oh, let's give him a little bit more probe just to keep him calm.
Totally.
That's kind of, you know, can be used for. So the next one, Ben, you want to talk about?
Etomidate. It's a GABA agonist, similar to the Versed and the Propofol. Yeah.
What, love those GABAs, huh?
Yeah, the GABAs. Better, it's a little better if your blood pressure is low. It's better for those hypotensive patients, but not as much as ketamine.
Right.
And what was that? You said the quote. What was that quote your that provider told you?
Oh, yeah. They're just like, oh, you're stable patient, prope. Not so stable, Etomidate, very unstable ketamine.
Cool.
You know, obviously what's available to you and stuff, but yeah, that's kind of the
cool.
The hierarchy. But, you know, there can be some variety to that too.
Cool.
But yeah, so Etomidate, that basically, you know, that kind of wraps that one up. Is there anything else for
you? No, that's, I love that. Just, you know,
yeah.
So you see the patient, you can not anticipate, but just being kind of prepared of like, okay, this is probably what I'm going to give.
Right.
You know, so that's, those are your sedation, you know, your hypnotics that you're going to be giving for the intubation. But this is RSI, so
right.
We're paralyzing too.
Right, absolutely.
And so there's two main ones that you'll see almost always.
Right. So the ones that will be in the kit is going to be sucks and rock.
Yep.
And what people say, rock rocks and sucks sucks. you know, it's just...
I've never heard that.
Oh, you
know, hilarious.
Never heard that.
No, that's
yeah,
funny.
Yeah,
it's
but
funny.
There's a... You know, there's different benefits to each one or contraindications.
Which one do you usually use first?
For the most part, sucks. I feel like just, you know, that's the one that, you know, people are going, you know, oh, just give, you know, 100 sucks or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
That's kind of, you know, the and what's cool about it, what I've, you know, heard said, and just even through a little bit of research, that one, you know, obviously acts very quickly, but it also, you know, stops paralyzing them very quickly too. So if you're needing to do like neuro assessments or, you know, what have you, you don't want them to be paralyzed for 30, 45 minutes,
right.
Sucks is what you want.
Right.
And so, yeah, as we were saying, there's two different ones, the sucks and rock. So sucks belongs to the category of depolarizing, you know, neuromuscular blockade. And then rock is going to be a non-depolarizing.
Cool.
So
they just work a little different.
Yeah. Different mechanism of action.
Cool.
And stuff that we don't have to, you know, get into. But it is, there's very interesting if you want to look into that. So with sucks, the contraindications that we're going to be seeing for is crush injury, traumas, and burns. That's where you want to stop for a second. It's be like, okay, do we actually want to be giving sucks? Because there is a potential for increased hyperkalemia.
Apparently, it's like a cardiac, like you'll literally cardiac arrest.
Yeah.
With certain ones.
Yeah.
The research we found kind of, it was one interesting thing was people that are chronically hyperkalemic, they don't seem to respond the same way, so they will actually have less of a response. If they're chronically hyperkalemic, they might not have that massive potassium influx and outflux and have this issue. But like apparently your like healthy burn patients mm-hmm. will have it, so it's
yeah,
like contraindicated
really
for
shift,
burn
yeah,
patients. So just again, back your mind so you know a little bit about the medication that you're pushing. You said trauma patients, I think you said before.
Yeah,
the
trauma,
crush injuries.
Burns and crushes. Just something to keep back of your mind. And, you know, obviously this is like, you know, very base level. Like they'll know like, oh, it's a you know, trauma or burn. We're not
yeah.
using sucks.
We're
everybody
rock,
knows that.
Right.
Yeah.
But just so you know.
Right. Yeah. And so, so very interesting medications there for sure. And then the next one is going to be, and this one I've seen actually added to our RSI kit recently, and is going to be neosinephrine,
oh, cool.
Which is pretty cool, you know, having, you know, in a time where people's blood pressure can, you know, drop dramatically, especially depending on what you're using and just the state, you know, that we're in,
totally.
Having that available to be able to give push doses for blood pressure support is awesome. And Neo, if you've listened to our other podcast, you know, is an alpha-1 agonist causing peripheral vasoconstriction and increase in blood pressure.
And what's the classic side effect with the Neo?
Oh,
give him a slug of Neo, what happens?
A little bit of reflex beta, or sorry, betacardia. A little bit of reflex bradycardia.
Yeah, the Neo. Give him a slug of Neo.
Man, getting too excited here.
A couple of the articles we looked into said that, you know, you're giving these medications, having the back of your mind, you may need some vasoactive support. I see a lot of the experienced ICU nurses, as soon as they start moving that direction, they're already overriding Levo just to have it on. Okay, well, we got him intubated. Now he's sedated. Well, now his pressure is 70 over nothing.
Right.
So they have that Levo ready. So them putting that Neo in there is pretty cool.
Right. Yeah.
Okay,
absolutely.
So you've, you know, you're the big boy now. They called it out. You got all the stuff. And then you walked in there and then you pushed the meds. And now the tube is in. What do you do?
Okay, we need to confirm tube placement because the party is not over until we've confirmed tube placement.
Nice.
Yeah. So the first thing that you'll always see, and I'm going to wrap myself out on this because, you know, I was a new grad in the ICU and they said, oh, we got color change. And I thought that they were talking about, like, the patient's actual pallor.
He was blue.
He was blue. Now he's pink. And I was like, man, that was quick. Like, I didn't think he looked that bad. But, man, you know, Dr. T just said, oh, yeah, look at that. Look at that color change. I was like, oh, man. Then finding out that, obviously, it's the end-tidal CO2 detector that is on the, you know, on the part of the, on the ET tube that will change from, oh, man, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe it's purple to yellow.
Nice. Gold is good.
Yeah, gold is good. And so you'll see that with the color change when there's CO2 present. Now, Ben, does that mean that we're good?
Well, not always. Now, we'll talk about that in another episode. We have some fast facts coming up another episode.
But fast facts with the fellas.
Fast facts with fellas. But just keeping in mind, and Andrew was the one who actually said this, like, I've seen multiple missed intubations, but there's color change. You bagged them up. Some of that air may be in their stomach. There's different things that can happen in their stomach that will result in this color change that we'll touch on at a different time. But basically, if the tube goes too far and it's in the esophagus, you might still have, or not the esophagus, it's in the epigastrium, might still have color change.
Right.
So just, you know, so that's why there's other parameters.
Exactly. Right? There's others. Yeah. So, and just, you know, we mentioned end-tidal CO2, that generally is the gold standard, but not that little adapter piece. It's actual, like, sustained capnography.
Sustained end-tidal CO2, is the, correct. Yeah,
with
sustained.
Good waveforms, yep. Good appropriate numbers. But just touching on it again, when we were talking, preparing for this episode, I could think of four just top of my head of missed intubations where we had color change on every single one of them.
Yep.
And they're like, oh, we have color change, but it's like, well, their belly sounds like a trombone's being played or
right,
whatever.
Right.
And that moves on to our next one, bilateral breath sounds.
Nice.
And something that as a new nurse, you know, there's always a resident in there or, you know, RT or whatever, and they'll always jump on, like, listening for bilateral breath sounds. I really do encourage you, like, get in there and be the one to listen for bilateral breath sounds.
Yep.
It'll test your, like, assessment skills under pressure, and it's to be able to say, okay, you know, watching them back, okay, we have it on one side, and then we have it on the other. We have bilateral breath sounds.
And where else do you also listen to?
Oh, over the epigastrium, nice. Which is interesting because in TNCC, if I remember right, they always said listen over the epigastrium first because if it's misplaced, you'll hear it immediately.
Right.
And if you ever get the chance to hear that, I know you can't just, like, leave it in there so all the students can listen to it.
Right.
But if you're the one to hear it, you will know it sounds just kind of like a, you know,
right. And as soon as you hear it, you pull the tube or you pull it back a little bit, a couple centimeters. But
right. You might need to completely pull it out because, you know,
sure.
They totally missed the airway,
sure,
right?
Totally,
and we need
totally.
To do what? We need to bag them up.
Bag them up.
Bag them up.
Bag them up.
Yeah, exactly.
I think the TNCC does say epigastrium first, and then you can do the lungs. But if you're in epigastrium, you're just gonna pull it out.
Yeah. So. And so then, and Ben, what is the here when we're listening for bilateral breath sounds? You kind of talked about going too deep or not deep enough. What could potentially be the case when you're listening for bilateral breath sounds? Not that I'm trying to quiz you here, but which way is it more likely to potentially go?
I right main stemmed him.
Yeah, which is interesting because I remember one time when we were doing this, someone actually left main stemmed them.
I've never seen it.
Dude, one time, and I was listening for bilateral breath sounds, and I was like, I don't have any on the right, but I have them on the left. And they're like, oh, no way, let me listen. Oh, sure enough, what the heck, how did that happen?
Wow.
Yeah, very, very,
I've
you
never
know,
seen that.
Yeah. So wherever reason, wherever it was at, it was only, you know, getting onto that one side, so we adjusted it and we were all good.
That's due to an anatomy issue, but just, you know, with most patients, one sits higher than the other, but basically,
right.
If it misses 99% of the time,
you're
it's
going
right main stem.
Yep. Absolutely. And then in the ICU, we always will get a chest x-ray.
Always do chest x-ray.
And then, you know, the physician radiologist will make sure that we're 3 to 5 centimeters above the carina for a good placement. And then just a little bonus, you know, seeing condensation in the ET tube doesn't necessarily mean you're in the right spot because you could see that if it's in the belly, but it just shows that, you know, we're exhaling and that's that water part.
Cool.
Part of exhalation.
Cool.
Yeah.
Love it. Love it. So that's kind of laid out.
Yeah.
For you.
Dude, so that will make you so much more confident on your first intubation.
Your first RSI.
Yeah, dude, because I was telling Ben when we first started, we were doing an intubation and they said give 40 of prop. and my preceptor just handed me a syringe that was all white and had, you know, 4 cc's pulled up, and she said, push it now. And I was like, okay, I have no idea what I'm doing. But, you know, this is scary.
Right.
Scary times, you know that your patient is on the brink right now. And so understanding these medications, feeling comfortable with the dosage, and, you know, even what preparation to have,
totally,
and then also how to confirm afterwards,
cool,
will make it go way smoother and ultimately better patient outcomes, more safety.
Dude, I'm telling you what, when they, you know, oh, we need the RSI kit. I'm literally, I don't know what the heck we're doing. You know, whatever. Like, but now you know.
Yeah.
Now you know.
That's it. All right. Thank you for tuning in for this episode. Be sure to
hit us up on the email if you have any questions.
Right.
I checked it about a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
So just hit us up on with any questions. I try to check it every once in a while.
Or you can hit us up on Instagram too, Tumal Nurses Podcast. We do have that going. We're not super active on there, but you know, you can always reach out to us that way too.
Hit us up.
All right. Take care, guys. Tumal Nurses expressly disclaims any liability in association with this podcast.